All right. Thank you. Hi, I'm Matt. And I'm today going to talk about global risk and why we have built such a fragile world. As you can see on this slide here, the real problem of humanity is we have Paleolithic emotions, medieval institutions, and godlike technology. E.O. Wilson, evolutionary biologist. This is because technological evolution is faster than institutional evolution, which is faster than genetic evolution. And the foundational risk-generating mechanism of the Anthropocene is the profound mismatch between the nature of our decisions and the scale of their effects on humanity, on the biosphere, and on future generations. This mismatch is why we have built a fragile world. This is not a moral diagnosis, it is a structural one, and it has a precise explanation and an actionable answer. But first, some background. Like blind monks examining an elephant, the scholarly community addressing global risk is organized into at least six and probably more distinct fields. Disaster risk reduction, exemplified by the Sendai framework, is heavily weighted towards local hazards and near-term response, systematically under-preparing for low-probability, high-consequence events and processes. Global catastrophic risk studies identifies civilizational scale hazards, but tends towards a hazard-by-hazard analysis with some bias towards techno-solutionism. National risk assessments treat risks often as bounded and manageable despite mounting evidence of cascading and cross-border failures. Systemic risk and polycrisis studies show that global systems generate hazards endogenously through feedback, tight coupling, and reinforcing of trapped states. Human behavioral and social sciences provides cognitive biases and social psychology that ground risk response. Each of these fields grasps something real and important, yet none integrates the whole. These fields give us the how of global catastrophe, the mechanisms and the drivers of risk. What they leave unanswered is the deeper question, the why. Why do humans keep producing these conditions that generate risk? And following insights from biologists like Nico Tinbergen and Ernst Mayr, the answer requires moving from proximate explanation to ultimate causes and explanation, from the mechanisms of risk and their development to the functions and the evolutionary explanations for why these things exist. Across all these fields, researchers keep independently reaching for the same vocabulary, a vocabulary of complexity, resilience, adaptation, lock-in, fitness traps. Some authors are explicitly calling for evolutionary study. Waring and colleagues argue that the Anthropocene is the product of an evolutionary ratchet favoring greater resource extraction. Hoyer et al. Call for a science of cultural evolution in the domain of climate change. These fields are groping towards the evolutionary framework without fully committing to it. Today, we commit. I contend that the evolutionary perspective is necessary to avoid global catastrophic risk. We'll explain. So evolutionary dynamics are operating everywhere, even right here, right now in this room. The cells in your body are accumulating random mutations, mostly harmless, but some potentially cancerous. Cancer is an evolutionary process, defection within a normally cooperative population of cells. At the human population level, cultural competition between groups has shaped norms, institutions, and technologies for millennia. We inherit these constructed niches, and they shape the development and the behaviors of present and future generations. Why is this relevant? Two reasons. One, biology has spent a very long time producing solutions to the structural problems of coordination, persistence, and sustainability. Two, because everything in the fields I've described just before can be hung on the extended evolutionary synthesis. Yet key insights of that synthesis are sometimes not to be found in any of those fields. Evolution by natural selection is substrate neutral, and it operates to degrees wherever there is heritable variation, differential fitness, and differential reproduction. This could be in populations of firms, policies, ideologies, institutions, technologies. These dynamics predictably apply and are often independent of human intention. The invisible hand of selection is always operating. If we turn our attention away from a governed domain, it multiplies whatever is locally fittest, blind to long-term consequence. Behavior and culture is evolutionary, but it is not automatically adaptively wise. In culture and politics, on some timeframes, fitness means virality or profit or prestige, not necessarily truth or safety or human well-being. Here are just two evolutionary dynamics of many, many that operating simultaneously have predictably generated a risk-filled world. The first is multi-level selection and the defection trap. In biology, groups of prolific egg-laying super chickens will peck each other to death when put together in a group, while groups of average egg-laying chickens thrive and do well. What is selected at the individual level does not always work at the group level. Climate emissions are a paradigm case. No individual firm, state, or consumer faces meaningful selection pressure against emitting. The cost is globally and temporally distributed, and the benefits are often local and immediate. Fossil fuel users are not unusually malicious, and firm-level selection just rewards consumption and externalized costs, even when we fully understand the consequences. As Waring and colleagues argued, evolving global-scale cooperative traits requires a population of competing global-scale entities. We don't have that. Therefore, voluntary global cooperation on global risk is unlikely to emerge spontaneously. That tells us what we must deliberately construct and deliberately maintain. Another example, arms races and prestige competition. Intense coevolution between newt poison and snake resistance has produced physiologically degraded organisms on both sides to no advantage. AI development is a clear governance case. Safety investment is individually costly for firms and competitively disadvantageous if rivals don't match it. Selection rewards deployment speed and punishes caution. Not because decision makers are reckless, but because non-reckless actors just become irrelevant. Social media follows the same logic. Platforms face selection towards outrage over accuracy, and no platform can exit unilaterally from the race. The degradation of the information commons is not a policy choice. It is the predictable byproduct of an evolutionary arms race. But not only have we generated global risk by failing to moderate these dynamics, we have degraded humanity's adaptive capacity in the process. Evolvability is the capacity of a system to generate, transmit, and retain complex adaptive solutions to problems. Not mere change, but incremental and compounding adaptation. And the conditions for evolvability, I argue, are being degraded simultaneously across global systems. Instead of variation, we have homogenization of financial systems, financial architectures, food systems, and information bubbles. Instead of modularity, we see tight coupling, just-in-time supply chains, globally integrated systems with single points of failure. Instead of transmission fidelity of information, we had institutional churn, a fragmented epistemic commons, and the erosion of professional norms. Instead of a stable selective environment, we experience policy ping pong and exponential technological change. Instead of outlaw suppression, we have regulatory capture and the active suppression of suppression mechanisms themselves. This is a formal meta crisis, not simply complexity or many crises simultaneously, but a degradation of the conditions that allow risk-reducing adaptations to accumulate. This is most apparent through the evolutionary lens. So we must make the invisible hand of evolution visible and direct its actions. An example, complex cooperative systems must block defectors or outlaws whose actions are individually advantageous but may be systemically degrading. In biological systems, this is exemplified by cancer. And in governed systems, we see firms externalizing environmental costs. We see industries capturing their regulators. We see states defecting from multilateral frameworks. These problems are tokens of the same type. Evolutionary dynamics selecting for locally successful but collectively destructive strategies. Now, evolutionary oncology offers two cancer treatment principles and others that translate directly. First, redundant multi-layer suppression. Biological systems deploy intrinsic cellular controls, neighborhood cell signaling, and systemic immune surveillance, analogous perhaps to internal compliance, civil society pressure, and national and international law. Each layer fails, often in predictable ways, and redundancy is essential. Second, suppress, don't try to eradicate. Aggressive eradication in cancer therapy often selects for the most resistant, most nefarious, most aggressive cancer cells. So we must shape what selection rewards, or markets will fall unconsciously into the dynamics that built our fragile world. So two examples perhaps of interventions. Supply chain examiners could be modeled on bank examiners in financial regulation. Mandatory embedded oversight with a system stability perspective that stimulate variety within the firm and modularity directly, enhancing evolvability as well as preventing reckless organizations over-optimizing. Redundancy and slack are not inefficiencies, they are adaptive reserves. Secondly, energy infrastructure policy. Long horizon investment in renewables requires regulatory stability that doesn't always will often exist. The intervention is not volatile subsidies, it is a stable selective environment through long-term regulatory contracts and cross-party policy commitments insulated from electoral cycles. This rewards cooperative entities. The first example enhances the internal architecture of evolvability. The second modifies the external adaptive environment. Those are just two simple examples. So, to wrap up, we have built a fragile world because the same dynamics that make human culture adaptive, competition, prestige, and optimization, now operate at a scale and speed that systematically degrades the conditions needed for cumulative adaptation. This evolutionary perspective is not biological determinism, nor a replacement for system science or social science. Rather, it is a general explanatory framework for why fragile architectures, maladaptive incentives, collective action failures repeatedly emerge and persist despite awareness and good intention. Complexity science helps explain the how systems become fragile. Evolutionary theory explains why those fragile arrangements are repeatedly selected for, locked in, and reproduced. So, effective global risk governance must shift towards actively cultivating evolvability, maintaining the structural conditions under which cooperative, resilient, and adaptive solutions can accumulate. We should explore the strategy of embedding evolution generalists across risk governance at all levels. Thank you.